healthcare organizations have become popular targets for cyber hackers. According to cybersecurity firm TrapX, healthcare attacks rose 39% last year, with 93 major incidents. And a big way in is through unprotected medical devices. Well, this got me thinking, how vulnerable might be Veterans Affairs Department or TRICARE? For some answers, we turn to Anthony James, Vice President of Marketing at TrapX Security. Anthony, good to have you on.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So you looked at healthcare organizations in the private sector, and I guess commercial and nonprofit. And what is going on? Give us the big picture here.
So what we've seen is an ongoing attack against medical infrastructure. And this has been going on for a number of years. We've worked with customers directly with our product to understand what these attacks look like. And what we've discovered going back as far as 2014 was there was an abundance of attacks going after medical devices that were connected to the infrastructure. And the primary reason and objective for those attacks was to establish a beachhead so that an adversary could then start navigating the infrastructure, looking for more of the private information that they could sell on the underground for profit.
I guess the implication here is that medical records are the most complete set of information available on an individual.
Correct, yeah. There's actually a report that was published in 2015. It's actually the end of 2015 by IBM that identified healthcare as being the number one targeted vertical throughout the entire year of 2015.
And when you say medical devices connected to the infrastructure, give me an example.
Sure. What we've seen and what we've identified as being compromised are things like blood gas analyzers, which is a specialized hardware device to measure, obviously, blood gas. But it's gone as far as connected CT scanners, MRI scanners, insulin pumps. We've seen a variety of anything that is a medical-specific device for a particular purpose in healthcare. As long as it has a network connection, it typically has the ability to be exploited.
So these devices then, the data that they put out is married up to the person's personal health record.
Well, that's the interesting part. There's not a lot of private information on those devices. So, for example, if you look at the blood gas analyzer, this is one of the first discoveries we had in the healthcare industry. It doesn't contain a lot of patient data, but what it does have is access to the infrastructure. So what we've uncovered is attackers installing some kind of code on that device, the blood gas analyzer, which gave them a back door. That then gave them a starting point where they could start navigating the network looking for where the patient records were stored.
Got it. And so how do they get the malware onto the medical device in the first place?
That is the big challenge for a lot of healthcare environments. And here's the problem that I guess healthcare is trying to solve, and the FDA is stepping in a little bit. A lot of these devices have a long lifespan. So if you consider the whole process of getting a device from manufacturing to a healthcare customer, it goes through FDA certification for the original design and requirements. And at that time, they typically choose a baseline operating system to run the application on top of. So even if it is, as an example, a blood gas analyzer, underneath it, it's running, in this case, it was running Windows XP. Well, therein lies a big issue, because that operating system obviously is an old operating system, has a lot of vulnerabilities have been discovered over the years, but the device manufacturers aren't typically going back and reworking the operating system patches to bring it to the current level. And in this case, this is a no longer supported operating system by Microsoft. So deploying that equipment means you're deploying an operating system that's vulnerable to attack. There's a lot of known vulnerabilities that attackers can exploit. And that's why they're going after these devices. They know they're not kept to the standards of a typical workstation a user might use in terms of security patches. And there's no known security solutions for these specific devices that you can install.
But how do they get to the device? Don't they have to be at it physically to be able to install something that way? Because you say they're attached to the infrastructure.
Correct.
Are they then reachable through the internet?
Well, really how this happens and what we've discovered in at least our forensics is there'll be a individual workstation, an employee that gets attacked via a spear phishing attack or a socially engineered attack where they're clicking on malware that they're not aware of that then seeks out and hunts for these vulnerable devices to deploy the backdoors.
We're speaking with Anthony James, Vice President of Marketing at Trapex Security. And what about the Veterans Affairs Department and, say, the big providers that go with the DOD's TRICARE system? They were not listed on your top 100 attacks in the medical sector for last year. Is that because they're really good at cybersecurity or they're just lucky?
I think it's a combination of both. I think government does a good job of securing their infrastructure and segregating it. Not to say that private healthcare doesn't, but I think there have been less attacks on that infrastructure because there's a lot of opportunity for smaller networks. If you consider the variety of networks that an attacker might go after, typically the smaller the infrastructure, the less security teams they have in play. So they become softer targets. So if I had to stack rank, if an attacker is looking at the breadth of healthcare infrastructure to go after, the larger infrastructure, which would include Veteran Affairs and other government agencies, might be lower on the list because they would probably have a better staff security team.
Now, there is the phenomenon of hackers trying different doorways, say, at organizations that have multiple locations. And if they can't get in through Los Angeles, they'll try Atlanta. And if they can't get in through Atlanta, they'll try Boston or Washington. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so and a lot of organizations may not be all that well equipped to correlate that information. So I would think that would be a particular thing for like a VA that has all those medical centers to worry about.
Oh, absolutely. Again, a lot of these attackers, they're looking for the softest targets they can find. So if they do go after, and there were some mega breaches back in 2015 that we saw, there were large, you know, volumes of patient records being stolen in the order of millions of patient records. And that's because they'll find an infrastructure with a large surface area, multiple locations like you mentioned, and they'll go down that path. They'll look for what are the vulnerable locations, and they'll just try and try and try until they get someone who has a vulnerable system that starts that attack vector. And once they're in on a device, typically inside the infrastructure, there's less security. So they're untethered at that point to go and roam around looking for the data they need.
So really, data protection as opposed to perimeter protection, it sounds like that's a place where these organizations need to up their game.
It's a combination of both, absolutely. You know, perimeter protection, I think, is a well-known art form, and there's a lot of infrastructure in play, and you know, that's something that's a well-known kind of security posture. Internal security has been a little bit more laxed because the theory was once you protect the perimeter, your internal employee infrastructure is generally safe. Well, the inverse is becoming more true, whereas you have a great perimeter, but now once you establish that beachhead or an attacker establishes a beachhead, there's less security. So absolutely, looking at the interior of the infrastructure, something that we often call lateral spread, is something that companies should be looking at as their kind of next generation of security architectures.
And finally, when the hackers get a hold of these records of individuals through healthcare organizations, and you list examples where hundreds of thousands at a time sometimes,
yep.
What do they do with it?
So the primary purpose has been for sale on the dark web, and there's actually been recorded numbers about what it costs for a patient record. Back in 2015, it was about $100 for a patient record. This is a rough number. Through our own research, through end of 2016, that number has dramatically dropped in the order of $20 to $30 for a patient record. The original motivation, back to your question, was to sell that data on the dark web for profit. What we've seen now, and the report kind of demonstrates this, is although the volume of attacks increased in 2016 compared to 2015, the number of patient records stolen had declined. And the reason for that is now we're finding attacks are morphing into, rather than stealing patient records, locking the infrastructure via a ransomware attack and trying to garnish money out of getting ransom to unlock that infrastructure again.
So they could get something like $1 million probably from a large organization.
We haven't seen that level of ransom being paid yet, but they are getting, you know, in the tens to potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars out of some organizations, because once an infrastructure gets locked down, it could be devastating for a revenue stream for a healthcare organization.
Anthony James is Vice President of Marketing at Trapex Security. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll post a link to this healthcare cybersecurity incident report and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.